All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, June 29th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
James Davis.
And we're from DFSR.com or DailyFantasySportsRankings.com for long. Still time to grab that free trial of our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. MLB, while the season lasts, we roll right into NFL under the same subscription package, so you're all good to go. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, DFSR.com/MLB. Buddy, what's it feel like to get an absolute ace-level pitching performance from Strasburg last night and total zeros from every single bat you rostered?
I mean, I don't want to call it the worst feeling of my entire life because that feels like maybe recency bias. But I'll tell you last night when, because I was with my kids, I was kind of not following the games too closely. And then I was basically just following Strasburg, and you sent me a text like, "Whoa, Strasburg, don't blow it," something like that. And so Strasburg comes through with 64 points, just 68% owned in my double ups. And then we finished with 85 points.
It was really something. It was really something.
I mean, the lowest ownership guy was at 30%. So it's not like we were way off board, like, you know, trying to sneak some sneaky value. Like, we basically had a 65 point pitcher and then chalk plays, like a bunch of right handers against Adalberto Mejia from the Red Sox. No, I'm going to take it back. It was the worst night of my life. It was the worst thing that's ever happened.
I remember some. Never mind. It's a weird thing, and it can really throw off your process to have nights like that happen. Like, we were in the chat room, or I was in the chat room last night, and people were asking questions like, "What's wrong with so and so?" And I was like, "Nothing." You know,
what's wrong? He decided to play baseball for a living.
Because I think someone brought up like, "What's wrong with Donaldson?" I was like, "What's wrong with Donaldson? The guy's got like a 900 OPS this year." You know, because the two at bats you watched him, he had like a walk and a strikeout. Like, it just doesn't. It doesn't add up. Like this. So actually, the overarching thing here is watching baseball can actually just completely ruin your... Not for me personally, but like the collective view can just ruin your process, right? Because you assign this like very short term, he's never done anything for me lately. With baseball, it's the worst. I mean, every DFS... people have this in DFS, like, he's never done for anything for me lately, as if like there's like some kind of obligation for the person to perform for you when you're
like some spouse or something.
Yeah, like. But anyway, but like baseball is the worst ever because the guys usually don't do anything, so it gets even worse. Like, it can feel as if the guy's never performed anything in his life. And then, but what really drove it home was when someone's asking, "What's wrong with Donaldson?" And I'm like, the guy's got like a 250 ISO with a 900 OPS this year. He's having a freaking great season. If he wasn't for injury, he'd be on pace for like 36 home runs. Like, the fact that you think something's wrong with him means that, like, for DFS purposes, like, the collective you should probably just not watch baseball, right? Like, it's just because it can absolutely ruin you for like the next time he's in a good position.
It's honestly why when I have a bunch of money in on my lineups, I actually sweat it even less. Like, what's going on? Like, I find it that I'm more emotionally attached and it bothers me more. And so for me, just knowing that the baseball's a long run and we're going to get there like we have every single season, like, I feel a lot more comfort in that than sitting there sweating out a Josh Donaldson at bat. Because the bottom line is, by the end of the season, he's probably still going to have a 250 ISO and a 900 OPS. And there are going to be nights where the price that he's at makes him a must play, or the pitcher he's facing, like, he's on average going to put up most of his stats against bad left-handed pitching, right? So if I have him on most of those nights and I don't have him on the other nights, I'll win in the long run. But yeah, last night was an example of not winning in the short term. So yeah, it's just going to happen.
All right, let's get to we have a double slate of games today. We'll spend a little bit of time on the early slate just because it's kind of spread out. Like, FanDuel has the games, only has the 12 and 1 o'clock game, I believe, on their early slate. They have a 12, the 1, and the 2 o'clock game. So they have a 3-game early slate, leaving off the 3 and the 4. DraftKings has all of them. It's going to be a little weird because there's just no way you're going to have the starting lineups in for probably the St. Louis, Arizona, and Chicago, Washington game on DraftKings by the time the 12 o'clock lock comes. So that's always like a little bit of a tricky spot. They typically don't spread out slates by that much. Like, it's usually like within a 3-hour time spot. This one is within 4. So that sometimes that uncertainty alone, even with late swap, is enough for me to sort of avoid it, just because I know you get the late swap, but on the off chance that, you know, someone you thought was going to play sat, and then you get into some really weird money maneuvering later. Like, so you can, right. Yes, you can swap out guys that don't play, but it doesn't mean you're necessarily getting your money in great. So,
well, exactly. If you swap out Bryce Harper, whoever replaces Bryce Harper in the Washington lineup in the outfield isn't going to cost anywhere near the same amount, right? So, like, maybe you can swap into someone on the Cubs or something, but yeah, agreed. It gets pretty dicey. I think For me, I just don't play slates like that because the way they increase variance is not in the way that I really like. Like, it's not like I can get more edge but increase my variance a little bit. I'm actually just keeping my edge neutral and increasing my variance, and I'm not too into that.
I do think that the chalk pitcher is going to be Kluber here on both sites. He's available on both FanDuel and DraftKings. Actually, this is why I actually don't mind the FanDuel three-game slate, because Kluber is just the clear pitcher here, and he's 11,000. Do you see him as like, will he just be like a 75% start on this, on that kind of that early slate?
It's hard to imagine that he isn't. I mean, he's a true ace. Like, he's back to 2014 form right now, almost 12 Ks per nine, 2.3 walks per nine. He's
better almost.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Ks. I mean, he's between, better on Ks, but the walks have gone up a little bit. I guess my point is that he's excellent, averaging 6.5 innings per start, which you'd love to see out of your ace level pitchers. And in a three-game slate, you really can't ask for a whole lot more than him facing a Texas team that's really underperformed relative to expectations, and particularly on the road. So I think, it's just simply a great spot. We'd probably be considering him for like a full all-day slate here, and given that you can get him on a three-game slate, it makes it a complete no-brainer.
I don't think guys like Fulmer are not really worth it for me. He doesn't strike enough guys out, and Casey doesn't strike out enough to begin with. Brad Peacock is just... I mean, he's had some crazy performances, because like, he's had some truly like eye-opening strikeout performances, and then been at other times just like walking the ballpark. So I don't know if I mean, he's an interesting tournament play because the Ks are there. I would worry about the walks. I mean, I take it back. His xFIP's pretty good this year. He's been good. He just can't go with if you walk five batters per nine, like you're gonna struggle to go more than six innings, which he has not done since he became a starter. So that's the problem there. Now he's K-ing everybody. He has, in his last six games, he has 8 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, 1 strikeout when he just left the game early against Houston, and then 9-8-8. Like, those are crazy awesome K performances, but the walks trouble you like enough to like, I don't know, how much do you kill your upside by just walking everybody?
A lot. You mentioned it, but just going deep into games, if you're a big strikeout guy and a big walk guy, and you're not, I mean, just that full stop makes it really hard to go super deep into games. So that really limits upside. I mean, obviously the Ks sort of make up for that. But the fact that this pedigree really hasn't been there in the past still makes me want to kind of walk on eggshells around Brad Peacock. I think you can certainly justify him for big tournaments, but I honestly think everyone is going to be thinking that way. So I'd be more eyeballing him for like the pitcher 2 slot on DraftKings maybe, but even then, just with the way the prices have worked out, he's not cheap there. He's almost 10,000, and I honestly don't think I'm going to roster Brad Peacock at all, even though I think he's a pretty interesting story and is performing quite well this year.
Now, even for tournaments, I'd rather have Kluber. I'd rather pay up.
That's what I mean. I think Kluber might be lower owned in tournaments because people think they're getting off the chalk and going to Peacock when they're actually not.
And there's been times like this. This is a season where a lot of times it's just been correct to eat that chalk. Like, it just makes, like, even though these guys are really expensive, the very top echelon of pitcher, it's nearly impossible to recreate for anyone lower. Like, you need to have just your most run good performance kind of the season. I know, and look, I get that's how, like, how you win a tournament, but in the long run, Kluber, I suspect, is like, or just like in the aggregate, Kluber is the guy who finishes most often in the top lineups out of this group of pitchers. And now I get that you can't run your tournament simulations a million times and just figure out, like,
yeah, sometimes the guys who have great safety also have big time upside, and the thing about Kluber is he strikes out a ton of guys, but he also pitches really deep into games, and so and he's also the most expensive. The interesting thing from my perspective about baseball that makes it a little different than other sports is that you can see, like in basketball for instance, you can see a guy from any position go off and be the highest points per dollar guy on a given night, right? Like, this just happens, the highest total points scorer. But in baseball, you can't. In baseball, pretty much the highest scoring pitcher will be the highest scoring player on a slate. And given that that's the reality that we're living in, getting the highest scoring player at the highest scoring position is usually how you wind up winning a tournament. Yeah, now sometimes, like say there's a guy like Francisco Liriano, who's very cheap right now based on a poor early start to the season, or even David Price in the late slate. Sometimes you can get these guys that are just dramatically underpriced relative to what they could potentially do, and then you can start talking yourself into it a little bit. But with Kluber and Peacock, I just don't really see that as a worthwhile comparison here. The reality is, especially on FanDuel, you're picking between 6 pitchers. And when you're picking between 6 pitchers and one of them is Corey Kluber in a plus matchup, it's going to be really hard for the rest of the pitchers to do anything. And when 3 of those pitchers are Daniel Gossett, Jake Junis, and Andrew Kastner, it gets even tougher. So, yeah, I think it's Kluber for me, all formats early slate today.
Yeah, no, and I think if you're looking to stack on that early slate, Cashner has been, he's coming back. I think he was on the DL for a little bit, and he's coming back now. He's real bad. The Indians are just in another good spot. They're throwing out. Their lineup just came through. Their lineup is basically the same as they've been running out in the short term now, with Kipnis and Lindor and Encarnacion like hitting to the top. So I have Brantley hitting third. So I do think that Cleveland, you'll see them as a pretty popular stack in terms of just cash games. Maybe Houston too. Daniel Gossett hasn't been terrible, but they still have a nice implied run line, and I don't think you're worried about any weather stuff from any of these early games, really. So, interesting slate on FanDuel. Like I said, you'll have all the information you need by the time the 12 o'clock game hits, where you can just roster Kluber, some of those Indians bats, and kind of just fill in the gaps where it comes. The Kluber doesn't do enough to your pricing to not be able to get, you know, a Lindor, who's actually still coming very cheap. He's been running super bad, and he should just be. I know people are kind of getting baseball fatigue by just continuing to trot out guys like Lindor when they're struggling a little bit, but is there all of the struggles are BABIP related, basically. So don't really worry about it too much there. Now, I like so in just kind of summary, like the early slate from a FanDuel perspective, probably not going to have enough information to feel great about it on DraftKings, and I think that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, I think you pretty much got there. I do think there's a couple. I mean, you're going to wind up filling in your bats around Kluber and probably just taking just all the best guys. So it's not going to be rocket science. But the team you really want to key on here is the Indians on all sides. Andrew Cashner, he's a guy that I think still people don't realize how bad he is, because his ERA has been reasonable and he's been good in the past. But after, you know, kind of bouncing around last season, landing on the Rangers, he's been truly awful. Like 4.3 Ks per nine, 4 walks per nine. Is about as bad as you can possibly get in the major leagues. That's like around that Mike Pelfrey sort of range. And the 5.4 XFIP is just, again, would be the worst in the majors if he managed to pitch enough innings to qualify. So I think just you really want to have as many Indians as humanly possible in that game. And then after that, you can kind of fill in the gaps, but just don't miss out on them when you're building your lineups.
All right, let's spend some time here on the evening slate. But before we do, give us a sponsor.
Sure, let's talk about In-Game Fantasy. So In-Game is a revolutionary new app in the daily fantasy sports space where I am currently getting my butt kicked in last night's contest that they sponsored for us, where actually I'm offering a free shout out to anyone who manages to beat my 0 runs I scored in this contest. So that means if you can score more than 0 runs in an in-game fantasy contest that's currently there called, I think it's a DFSR $5 double up, then I will give a shout out of your choice on the podcast, one per podcast, as long as it doesn't give us the explicit label on iTunes. But what is in-game fantasy, you might be wondering. If you listen to this podcast frequently, you're not wondering that, but bear with me. It's basically an app that allows you to play the role of manager from night to night. So you get an in-game fantasy. You actually draft your lineups as the night progresses, and you draft from the available players on deck. And when they do something, it basically simulates a baseball game. So if you get in there and Alberto Mejia strikes out Mookie Betts somehow, well, then he strikes out on your team. You don't lose fantasy points. You just have one out in a regular inning of baseball. Maybe Dustin Pedroia gets a single, next guy gets a double, and so on and so forth. So you actually have to drive your guys home. They'll be on base. It's like sweating an ESPN box score, something like that. And it really is, I think, the most engaging way to watch and sweat your games from night to night. If your daily fantasy sports lineup in the traditional salary cap format is falling apart, In-game's a great way to chase those losses and break even. So check out In-game Fantasy, use promo code DFSR, and actually right now they're offering us a 25% no drip bonus. So you just make a deposit, you get a plus 25% bonus into your account that you can immediately put into play. So go check it out, come beat me, and I'll do a shout out and embarrass myself for you on the podcast. So thanks.
Yeah, I put up 3 runs because I'm actually good at in-game fantasy. I was just picked all the right batters last night.
You told me you accidentally picked Ryan Zimmerman.
I did, actually.
Bryce Harper, but you misclicked. So nice shot.
And he got on by an error, so it was actually better to be lucky than good. All right, let's go to the evening slate of games tonight. This is an interesting set, right? Because we have two pitchers that are clear aces. One is like an ace's ace, and then the Archer is probably like 1A. Let's just start with Kershaw. He's very expensive on a short slate. This is like kind of the worst time for a guy like Kershaw to show up, because these shorter slates just give you fewer chances to sort of just round your lineup out with guys in good spots who are coming on the cheap. So he's coming at 12,500 on FanDuel, which is very, very expensive. I think he's like 13 on DraftKings. Is he just too expensive here, or is this a kind of a situation where you maybe just ultra punt? And when I say ultra punt, I mean like a $2,000 guy that's hitting like 7th or 8th, right? Like, I don't mean like a punt play at 2,000 at the top of the lineup is something you can stomach because, I don't know, the guy's the plate appearance expectation is there. The guy down the lower part of the lineup who's likely just not very good, is it worth it to like maybe roster a guy like that in order to get a guy like Kershaw, or can you like make a strong case to fade him tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it always just comes down to what the other options are. And tonight, I mean, we'll get to him eventually, but there are some other options I think you can look at here that you're getting a similar upside, if not exactly the same, but you're not exposing yourself to quite as large a risk. I think there's a number of little things that I like about some other opportunities here. So I'll just go through them, I guess. The first thing is that Kershaw is pitching an American League game. You know, some of the other guys we're going to be considering are going to have that sort of automatic out in the lineup in the pitcher slot. And the second of all is that he's been really good this season. Like, don't get me wrong, he's been excellent, but he hasn't quite been that top tier of dominance that he has been. He's more than doubled his walks, and again, he's doubling from 0.6 walks per nine, so he's still amazing. Don't mistake me. But really, the way Kershaw's gone wrong this season is he's giving up more fly balls, and a lot more of those fly balls are turning into home runs. And I don't want to suggest that he's turning the corner or past his prime or anything like that, but for a Kershaw for a player to perform on the level that Kershaw had been, like a low twos xFIP, high ones ERA, that's just a transcendent sort of historical performance level. And if he just dips down into merely being amazing, he's no longer a must play at some of these prices, especially on DraftKings. So I guess I just want to keep my eyes open to not playing Kershaw tonight, just because he's so expensive that it just might not wind up being an optimal decision.
The Angels threw out a lineup yesterday that was a borderline disaster. Like, I can't even remember what it was, but I know they didn't play Pujols and they sat somebody else. There was two guys, I think, that I had to like query the database just to make sure we had like player IDs for.
That happened. Yep, absolutely.
Forget the part where like they have projections. Like, well, let's just make sure we have just like ID lineups for be able to like just make sure all these guys are real guys. I don't suspect they throw out like the exact same lineup, but the Angel lineup does really stink, right? But the thing is, they also don't K a lot, right? And Kershaw can like, Kershaw's a different kind of pitcher. He's not your average like lefty, obviously. Sure. So that you can sometimes not completely throw out, but diminish some of like what a player's done for his career when you have a guy like Kershaw. Because like if Kershaw had been pitching against said player, they K a lot more, obviously. So, sure. But guys like Escobar, Angelo Simmons, I've mentioned before, these guys just don't. Even Cameron Maybin, like they don't K a ton. And I think you do reduce expectation there a little bit for a guy like you said. Kershaw is just striking out less players this year than he has in the past. He only has like 4 double-digit K games this season so far, which for him is really, really low. I am a little concerned. Moneyline is in his favor, obviously. Implied runs are in his favor. Really, everything is in his favor. I'm just worried that we're not going to get enough savings on that. We're going to really need to make a pretty big sacrifice on the bats somewhere to get his price in, really on both sites, FanDuel and DraftKings. So, a little concerned. Not to say it's not going to happen. Right now, the top lineup with Kershaw for our system sits significantly behind the top current lineup. If you pivot it off of you on FanDuel, yeah, which would mean there would need to be some kind of mark change in a couple bats come in, or there's some money line movement, which I don't expect there's going to be a ton of there. So we'll see how that kind of plays out over the course of the day. I do think this is a day we could see a fade. I'm not totally positive. Do you think if the fade was in order, do you think Archer is a fine kind of pivot?
I do think so. I mean, the thing about, like, if you just throw out the names and just look at performance this season, Archer is really only worse in one category, and that's walks. He's striking out more guys. He is walking 1.5 more batters per nine, and that definitely is significant. He's been depressing home runs more successfully, and Archer is actually running bad in terms of BABIP. So I think Archer is just a great play here. I don't really know how else to say it. Like I mentioned, getting him out of the AL into an NL park and facing the Pirates, who are a bottom 7 team in terms of WOBA against righties, even though they actually sort of have the same issue the Angels have, which is not striking out very much, I think it's a good spot. And again, we always try to hammer this home as well, but it's not like I think Archer is a favorite to outscore Kershaw just on a strict point scoring basis, but when you can get a pretty significant savings here and it allows you to afford some of the other bats, I can definitely see landing there. I do think that as we get closer to lineup blocks, we will free up some money and some cheaper guys will come into consideration, but there's kind of already like a lot of just good players that are not expensive. Like, you know, Eric Thames comes to mind. He's now been consistently in the 70% ownership rate. He's still 3,000. So it's like, how much do we really need to save on our current lineups almost? But yeah, I think I could wind up settling on Archer and feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, that's the question you're asking yourself. He's 20% cheaper than Kershaw. can you get 20% worth of the, you know, can you get 80% of Kershaw's performance from Archer? I think you can. Like you said, that the Pirates strike out even less. This season, they're only K-ing 18% of the time versus righty pitching. Angels were, well, actually, sorry, that's against righties, but the Angels are sort of somewhere in that same range in K percentage. I think I can probably consider doing it. He doesn't have as huge, the win expectation isn't as high for him. The money line is really close. Italian is a good pitcher, so that's kind of killing some of Archer's win percentage here because he's only a minus 20 favorite right now, which is pretty damn low for a cash game pitcher. And that actually has me a little bit worried too, because your ability to get the win on both sides really does make a difference, even more on FanDuel. So this is gonna be a tough call.
I just want to clarify one point you made as well, which is, can you get, so if he's 80% of the price, can you get 80% of the production? It doesn't always work out that perfectly, but just because we've talked about this again before too, but pitchers just have a higher points per dollar expectation in general as well. So that's why it's often correct to take, like, the highest just strict points per dollar guy in our system tonight is Homer Bailey, just because he's so cheap. But the fact that we have him projected for just 26 fantasy points means that you're going to still need to get like the 20 more points that Kershaw is going to score, or whatever. Like, you still need to find that somewhere. And the fact of the matter is that at other positions, you just don't oftentimes see as high points per dollar multipliers, and you certainly don't get it with the same degree of safety. So I could see, I just want to clarify that unfortunately it's not always as simple as just take the highest points per dollar guy and roll from there, like it is in, say, basketball, just because pitchers are so unusual when it comes to daily fantasy sports.
No, you're right. That's a good point to make. You need to make sure you're getting it from the offensive production side. And as we've seen just kind of in the short term, or just in baseball in general, that's far from a lock on a night-to-night basis. Like, even when you think you have the most lock-it-up situation, you know, like Blue Jays righties against Miley last night, or Red Sox righties against Mejia, it just doesn't always happen, right? And so, right. It's going to happen less for the hitters than it would for the pitchers, if that makes sense. Like, the pitchers are just going to be more consistent over the long term. So, no, you're correct. This is what's going to make tonight's decision-making pretty tough, I think, but it's definitely between those two guys in terms of FanDuel, at least starting pitcher one. I think where we're gonna probably run into some issues here is on DraftKings, where you for sure cannot roster them together. It's simply too much money. There are some other guys out there to consider for starting pitcher two. They have big question marks. I'm wondering, our system still likes David Price. I get why. It's still drawing on some historical stuff and some outward projections. But man, has he been bad, right? Like, he has been, like, and he's been bad plus the injury. Give me your thoughts on Price. Is he, like, is it okay to roll him? He's so cheap now, 7,700. This is, like, getting close to, the bottom third tier of DraftKings pricing for a guy who has, obviously, insane pedigree. Do we want to be a day early or a day late on Price, I guess is kind of what I'm driving at.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's going to all come down to the salary you have to pay for him on whatever night. Like, I think if he were as cheap as Homer Bailey, for instance, I would instantly lock him in there and just kind of throw caution to the wind. That being said, whenever a pitcher, well, first of all, Price is not super young. He's almost 32, and struggling with injuries just really exacerbates things. I mean, he was excellent the last few years in Boston, but there was downward trend of, you know, decreasing strikeouts and slight ticks up in walks. And so the fact that both of those have really dramatically shifted against his favor, given the injury things, and now he's dealing with a finger injury as well, I do think that it's troubling, to say the least. Now, it's going to come down to who else we're considering. Like, I mean, yes, in a vacuum, you can clearly say that he's not super safe, but who are the other options we're going to consider? Let's compare him against those options, because I would guess that as we go through this, they're probably not super safe either, but who else are we taking a look at from your perspective?
Well, I mean, other guys the system kind of likes. I mean, it throws out Bailey, but I don't think we need to take a risk there. He didn't even make it through two innings last game, so forget him. I mean, Dinelson Lamet, he's around the same salary as Price, so I don't have to repeat that word. He's had two very bad games and one excellent game and like three pretty good games in his repertoire this year. He has minor league numbers that suggest that the K stuff is probably on the real side. Like, he's been striking out more than double digit. He has more than double digit Ks per nine every stop along his way and like through the minors. He's also got some control issues. I'm not sure we have enough of a sample. The ERA stinks this year at 660, but the XFIP is more like 4, which is a run and a half lower than Price's is this year. I mean, is that enough to make the case for 10% less? You pay 7,000 for Lamet on DraftKings. Is there enough of a case there, and ballpark 2 helps him, to kind of pivot off of a quote-unquote known quantity, although I'm questioning how much we know about Price at this point, to a guy like Lamet, who's young and maybe will be something one day, but we just don't have enough of a track record on him right now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Lamet is he does have all those other factors very firmly in his favor. The ballpark, I don't think, is, you know, worth just pointing to and then moving past. Like, it actually is hugely advantageous. We've seen poor pitchers in the past come into Petco and look like great pitchers. Like, Tyson Ross comes to mind, a guy who I've disparaged every single time he's going to start this season, was sort of ace level when he pitched in Petco. So I think I definitely want to acknowledge that pretty strongly. And then there's the Braves. You know, they're a bottom 10 team in terms of WOBA against righties. They don't really feature a lot of scary guys throughout that lineup that are going to make you feel like, well, that guy against Lamet, like, you know, Nick Markakis against Lamet, geez, what's he going to do to even get through that heart of that order? You know, the Braves don't really strike fear in you that way. And I think you can make a case too that Lamet's run bad in terms of home runs per nine, given the park that he pitches in. So I actually think there's a decent amount that could go in his favor here. You know, where Price just looks like he's pitching poorly, Lamet actually looks like he's pitching pretty well and things just aren't coming together for him. But yeah, I think you'll probably be just slightly out on an island playing him over Price just because of the way things have kind of played out earlier this season. But I'm not sure it's correct. Like, I think that you might just want to look past the ERA and really take a hard look at playing him.
I think I would probably play him. For all the reasons you just mentioned, I think that there's enough to draw on. Like, he has enough innings with these kind of peripherals that I think, yeah, I just think it's probably worth the chance. And that $7,000 salary is the exact thing that helps you get in like a Kershaw or an Archer, probably maybe more, even more likely Archer in this case, just because that Kershaw salary is 13.3 is really hard to stomach on a short slate on DraftKings. So where their pricing is pretty damn tight when it comes to the hitters. So getting that kind of 13.3 pricing, I just don't know if you get all the way there. There's a couple guys in the sort of like the mid tier, like we mentioned, Taillon is in there. The Rays strike out a ton. He's an underdog, which you never really like to see, but maybe he can kind of run hot against that lineup, just considering how many just misses they have in their bats. And then guys like Jimmy Nelson, the ballpark doesn't really do anything for me there. Jay Happ, probably just too expensive. So I think for our system, I think you're going to be looking at something like Archer and Price or Archer and Lamet, or if there's a cheap or super cheap hitter that can come in, or maybe even two, then maybe you get yourself all the way up to Kershaw, but I'm just not sure. But I think DraftKings is going to be, I really just do think DraftKings is going to be very difficult. Usually I get excited for like Kershaw nights because I think that they just represent, like Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale, these guys, these kind of nights just represent so much safety as compared to like almost everyone else in the majors that pitches, and I'm not sure everyone is able to totally properly evaluate that. Tonight, I'm not as excited simply because I'm just not sure the savings is there on the bats.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think, you know, again, I'm going to figure out where those bats come in. We still have a lot of time before lineups come out, so I don't want to make any huge declarations, but I think for right now that passes the sniff test there, Doug.
All right, let's get on to some hitters before we get out of here. So tonight, you know, we mentioned earlier in the podcast how the Red Sox specifically, to a lesser degree than the Blue Jays, were pretty chalk-owned last night and underperformed. And that's just something that sticks in people's minds. You had Betts coming in, like 68% ownership. Young was 70%. Pedroia was 65% or something like that, kind of guessing. These are on FanDuel, at least. They're pretty highly owned on DraftKings as well. And obviously, they just don't get the job done. One game sample sizes mean nothing, but do you think, you know, they mean nothing for like if you're actually understanding statistics, but if you had that happen to you last night, and we just see this all the time, the old never again philosophy that we discussed is erroneous earlier in the podcast. Do you think that affects their ownership percentages like tonight? Like, do you, okay, put it this way. They're basically in the same spot tonight. Do you think you see them just coming in less owned simply because of what they did yesterday?
Probably slightly, but I think that so much of the money in daily fantasy baseball is actually pushed by people that know what they're doing. So I think that'll go down marginally, but that will actually just more reflect the people. Well, there are some other options too, so that's definitely a contingency that you should be aware of. But yeah, I think by and large, they'll still be pretty heavily owned just because the matchups are a 10 again. I mean, they're both facing guys in Gibson and Jimenez that have higher than 5 xFIPs, so you really love to see that. Both Gibson and Jimenez walk, if you were a rounding type of guy, they're walking 5 guys per 9. Like, they're just two ideal matchups for two teams that can really punish pitchers with control problems. So I think that Yeah, you should see pretty heavy ownership here. We stress it pretty hard, and I think that most people who actually follow baseball from now and actually are willing to put their money in on daily fantasy baseball understand that it's more than a night to night thing. But I don't know. Do you think I overestimate the general DFS going public?
I probably overestimate the vocal minority when it comes to this, right? Like, so, I'm just probably, you know, when I say that, I'm talking about, like, you know, people that we talk to in our chat room, just kind of general Twitter kind of stuff. Like, sometimes people that tend to have, like, you know, among the casual fan that have the loudest voices don't really represent, like you said, what the actual percentage money of the industry has, like, sort of a clue about these things. And if you have a clue about these things, you just know. You know, the Red Sox are projected to put up like another 6 runs tonight. Has Vegas been trending a little high on them? Maybe, you know, maybe they've just been running bad too. Like, it just, it's like hard to know exactly like where the middle ground is on like implied Vegas runs and what the actual expectation is, especially for a popular team like the Red Sox. But I'm completely happy to go back to these guys again. Like, just like guys like Betts, the guy's like a stud. It doesn't. He's way underpriced. Even like if you saw Benintendi maybe move back up, like because they have a righty tonight. Like if he moved up to like the second in the lineup at 3,200, he'd be the easy, pretty easy call to make.
Yeah,
even
like
Pedroia is only 3,000 ish. These guys are just still coming really cheap. Now the Red Sox don't have a lot of guys that can move up and be a super punt play, but you're getting that lower middle tier of pricing on a team facing a guy like Kyle Gibson, and I'm just completely fine with it, especially too because they don't have these guys don't have a ton of platoon stuff like working against them. So facing against the righty, I think I'm just totally fine with it. I'm kind of in the same place with Ubaldo and versus the Blue Jays. All those guys, Martin, Donaldson, Bautista, they're just still coming really cheap. I'm totally fine going back to it. What happened yesterday for me personally has absolutely no bearing. After those two teams, is there another team that you could see yourself stacking either in cash, maybe on the little cheaper, or do you just think maybe just goes under-owned?
Yeah, sure. So I think both sides of the Yankees-White Sox game is actually pretty interesting here. I mean, the difficulty with the White Sox is they really don't have anyone who hits right-handed pitching, but the line is pretty darn high in this game. Now, part of that also is going to be because James Shields happens to be making an appearance here. Shields, this poor guy, like, so Shields this season, tell me if you can reconcile these two figures. He has a 93% left on base percentage. So you're like, geez, his ERA must be like high twos, maybe like low twos, right? No, he's got a 4.26 ERA. He leaves on base 93% of the guys who get there and still manages to have a below league average ERA. And that's just because he's terrible at basically everything else. I mean, he's got a solid 5 walks per 9. He's allowing just 31% ground balls. So basically every ball that comes off the bat against him is a hard hit ball in the air to the outfield. And he's even just running incredible on BABIP, like a 239 BABIP. When it all comes crashing down for Shields, which should be shortly here, it's going to be quite a big mess. And I think the Yankees are really well positioned to do that. You know, the Vegas likes them as well. I just think that, especially with some of the other, I mean, maybe they'll be higher owned because of some fatigue on guys or on teams like Boston and Toronto. But yeah, I think the Yankees are worth giving a nice hard look at.
One of the reasons our system is struggling to get in even the most expensive pitchers like Archer and Kershaw, when I say struggling, meaning like usually when Kershaw pitches, he's in 100% of lineups, right? Like just from having stared at this for hours and hours and hours, this is usually the case. The reason it's not happening today is because these somewhat expensive-ish guys or, you know, upper middle tier and higher guys are in such good spots. Like even guys like Aaron Judge, like I get that his standard deviation is probably higher, all things considered, or, you know, based on his average points, but he's just in such a great spot. I know he's expensive, but guys like, I mean, he's Apple. We don't need to like go into what he's been doing this season, but like he's been basically the rookie of the year and the MVP. But he's got like 1,100 OPS, hit his 27th home run last night.
Oh, well, have a cultural philosophy around developing young talent the way the Yankees do. You're just going to get these diamonds in the rough sometimes.
Dude, way to run hot, by the way. I mean, like, like Jeter who? Like, who cares? this guy's even way better. But yeah, like, so it just wants to get these huge bats in there, and I get it. Like, right? Like, he's just in such a good spot. And so all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I want to get Betts, Judge, and Bautista into my outfield. Well, now I'm playing like guys like David Price and Dylan Lamet, and it's just a tough spot. No, I really like that spot. Yankees kind of on the whole are coming pretty expensive across the board. I mean, Brett Gardner, 3,200, that's kind of no problem. But the rest of their lineup, you know, Sanchez is over 4,000, that's pretty expensive for a catcher. The bottom of their lineup doesn't really it doesn't really like make you feel great like Ellsbury and Gregorius and Headley, these guys, but I still think you maybe get some of them cheaper. They can maybe possibly move someone up. Andy Har played yesterday. He was coming really cheap. Like, it's only 2,000 on DraftKings. So I think there are some other spots for the Yankees, but their big bashers, specifically Judge and Sanchez, mostly Judge, are just coming very, very expensive. And that's really the only problem with them. Like, you're gonna need to punt pitching to play them.
Yeah, I feel you. It's going to be hard to both pay up for big pitching and pay for expensive bats as well. So given that it's going to be hard to have both, it's going to make for a pretty interesting night, I think.
Hey, well, like I just say, if it's hard for us, it's hard for everybody. That's what I like to tell the users. So. All right, we're from DFSR.
I think so anyway.
It makes everyone feel good. We're from DFSR.com. DFSR.com/MLB. Get you a free 3-day trial to the projection system we've been referencing basically the entire time on this podcast. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. And if you're still on the podcast right now, please go over to iTunes and rate and review us so we can get those average ratings up. It really does help in terms of just boosting listens. And so if you go over, rate it 5 stars. Anything less is absolutely unacceptable. We really, really appreciate it over at iTunes. That will really help us a lot. We'll be back again tomorrow talking a full Friday in baseball. Buddy, enjoy it.
I will, man.